KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 8 o'clock, we have cloudy skies, a little bit of fog, and it's 18 degrees. We do look for that patchy fog this morning, otherwise partly cloudy to cloudy and a high of 33. Good morning, I'm Rick Henson with KJAN News. In local news, the Atlantic School Board Wednesday evening extended a mask requirement through January 13th, which is their next regular board meeting. Superintendent Steve Barber told KJAN News the board had previously extended the requirement through December 22nd, pending a decision by Governor Reynolds, but since she did nothing with regard to the mask requirements on Wednesday, the board extended the mandate to January 13th.
We felt that to stay the course there and wait to see what happens there, and by that time you'll have three or four more weeks of COVID data and kind of see what's going on at that time as well.
Meanwhile, face coverings are required in all buildings and situations where it is not feasible to social distance. In other business, the Atlantic School Board approved the resignation of Matthew Smith, assistant high school boys soccer coach. Barber said he is taken a head soccer coach position. The board also accepted the resignation of Chase Roller, middle school wrestling coach, and they approved the criteria for remote learning.
Basically saying if a non-medical student who is remote learning or not meeting the expectations outlined in the return to learn plan, that they would be required to come back to school if they had one F in one of their in their class. And then it also outlined how attendance was taking place, whether medical or non-medical. If they're not getting their work done, that is an unexcused absence.
And he said also if during a grade check, which takes place every 2 weeks, a student has a D or an F and being remote learning, there will be a plan put together and a student will be put on 2-week probationary period. If they get their grades up, then they can stay in remote learning. Otherwise, they'll have to be required to come back for in-person learning. There are about 90 to 95 remote learners with about 40 students considered non-medical. The board also approved a change order for the Atlantic Athletic Facilities Improvement Project in the amount of $19,586. Barber said the proposal is for the refurbishment of the high school track where there are some low spots and other such damage. The quote for that work came from Midwest Tennis and Track, who just happens to be the same company that will install the top surface for the track.
So not only did we get a decent price, but also we got the same subcontractor doing all the work.
The majority of that work, he said, will have to wait until spring because of the freeze and thaw cycle of the weather. Well, the CAM School District's Board of Education on Monday night re-elected Gary Dinkla as board president and Chuck Kinsey as vice president for another term, that being 2020-21 school year. Their action came during a regular meeting during which they also approved a School Budget Review Committee, or SBRC, request for a modified supplemental amount of $20,640 for open enrollment out, and an SBRC request for $160,906 for the at-risk dropout prevention program. Superintendent Paul Cron told KJAN News the CAM School Board voted to leave their meeting dates and times unchanged. They will continue to be held the second Monday of each month at 6:30 p.m. in the superintendent's office. And he said Lindsay Jotty was reappointed as board secretary treasurer. Well, the Iowa Department of Public Health has announced that federal government will send up to 30% fewer doses of COVID vaccine to Iowa than previously expected. A statement released by the agency Wednesday night indicated it would take some time for state officials to adjust distribution plans. Earlier in the day, the acting Iowa Department of Public Health Director Kelly Garcia said the state was poised to move quickly once doses of the vaccine arrive.
Now that Iowans are starting to get vaccinated, we're committed to sharing progress and publicly reporting on our state's progress.
The agency will post a running tally of how many Iowans have been vaccinated on the state's coronavirus tracking website, along with information about the vaccines that are available.
I have full confidence in the efficacy and safety of the vaccine and believe it is key to turning the tide of the pandemic.
Garcia said communicating the facts to the public is a critical part of the state's response.
We will also provide regular updates on our progress in Iowa, and we'll work to reach vulnerable populations, including non-English speakers, refugee communities, those we know have historic hesitation around vaccination, and people with disabilities.
By Tuesday evening, Governor Reynolds said about 500 frontline workers in hospitals and other healthcare settings had been vaccinated.
For months, we've been anxiously awaiting a vaccine, knowing that it would mark the most significant turning point in this pandemic. But for now, we must continue to be patient for a few more months as the vaccine supply increases along with the number of people who will be receiving it.
But now scrapped plans had been up for for up to 154,000 healthcare workers and 59,000 nursing home residents and staff to get doses of the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, which are expected to arrive this month. Reynolds says he plans to be vaccinated once access expands to the broader population.
My decision to wait isn't based on any hesitancy about the vaccine. Rather, during this first phase, I want to make sure that those on the front lines caring for Iowans and long-term care residents who are at risk are vaccinated first. I'm confident that the vaccine is both safe and effective.
The newly assembled panel of health experts from across the state have held two meetings in the past week to discuss the lineup for vaccinations. Garcia said they'll meet again next week to discuss the next phase, and it's likely to be people who work in schools, food production, and in prisons.
Again, this next prioritization will be focused on work settings.
The group is meeting in private. Garcia says that allows participants to speak frankly and fosters a free flow of conversation.
These decisions cannot be made lightly or easily.
Open government advocates say the group could build public confidence in the vaccine process by having public rather than private discussions. The state of Iowa received $1.2 billion from the federal government to deal with pandemic-related expenses this year. Nearly $50 million of that has not been spent. Governor Kim Reynolds said she has a plan to distribute the final $47 million by the end of the year as required, but she's hoping the pandemic relief package Congress may pass yet this week gives the state some extra time.
And that just will allow us to do it in a more efficient and effective manner.
The governor said some of the broadband grants the state awarded earlier this year were returned because companies could not find parts and complete the projects by the end of this month. The $47 million also includes $21 million Reynolds had originally intended to use on computer software for state government. The U.S. Treasury's Inspector General ruled that was not an allowable expense for pandemic relief funds, and Reynolds said she has a plan for how to deploy that money elsewhere, but is waiting to see if Congress gives states authority to use the money in 2021. Well, Tyson Foods says it has fired seven top managers at its largest pork plant after an independent investigation into allegations that they bet on how many workers would test positive for the coronavirus. The company said the investigation, led by former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, revealed troubling behavior that resulted in the firings of the plant in Waterloo. Tyson Foods President and CEO Dean Banks said the behavior exhibited by these individuals does not represent Tyson core values, which is why we took immediate and appropriate action. Banks traveled to the Waterloo plant on Wednesday to discuss the actions with employees. Elsewhere in the news, the Creston Police Department this morning said 17-year-old Garrett Don Sharp of Afton was arrested Wednesday night at 619 North Birch Street on a charge of arson in the first degree. Sharp was taken to the Union County Jail and held without bail until seen by a judge. Authorities said also a woman residing in the 1300 block of West Adams Street in Creston reported on Tuesday that her vehicle had been broken into. Some of the items were recovered later in that day at 200 South Park Street. Items still missing include a massage gun, a can of mixed nuts, flex paste, and an inactive credit card. The loss estimated at just under $100. A man from Creston reported that same day that his vehicle parked in the 100 block of South Stone Street had been broken into. A wallet had been stolen. The loss estimated at just $15, though. Wednesday morning, a woman residing in the 400 block of West Lucas Street in Creston said her vehicle had been broken into. She said her vehicle registration had been stolen. A woman residing in the 300 block of North Vine Street reported that same day that her vehicle had been broken into. And missing items include Beats headphones, her vehicle registration, and tools. The estimated loss was around $100. And a man residing in the 500 block of South Poplar Street in Creston said late Wednesday morning that his vehicle had been broken into as well. He said two credit cards, a checkbook, and vehicle insurance card were stolen. There was no dollar estimate of the loss. That is a check of our news on KJAN. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.